If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the...
Oh, wow, that got me right there. You're choked up there.
All choked up here about hour number two. Second half of the program begins right now with the two-minute drill. It's brought to you by our friends at Tickets for Less. TicketsForLess.com, locally owned and operated, Kansas City's best, the nation's best. They just happen to be here in Kansas City when it comes to getting you tickets to any event. Of course, the big events, Chiefs, Jags tomorrow, and of course, the AFC Championship game. Wherever it might be played, Kansas City or Atlanta, they have tickets for you. Great selection of seats. Go to TicketsForLess.com if the game isn't played, whichever game isn't played. If you want to buy for both Atlanta and Kansas City, no problem. If the game isn't in Atlanta, you'll get that money back. If it's not in Kansas City, you'll get that money back. So you are all covered at Tickets for Less. That 100% fan insurance guarantee is the best. Plus, you can give them a call at 913-685-3322. If you need some help, yeah, that's right. Real human beings, real people helping you out. That's how Tickets for Less was founded. That's how Tickets for Less is operated today. Get those Chiefs Jaguars tickets, VIP tailgate passes, and parking passes right now. Just go to TicketsForLess.com. Let's start the drill in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Eitan Shanner, Fox 29, is there. Eitan, how are you, sir?
Very conflicted, Saran, but I'm doing well. I'm fine with my team. I just don't know what to do with your game. That's all.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. I get it. Like,
I have a 14-year relationship with Andy Reid. Spags is one of the best human beings I've ever met personally in my life. And Doug Peterson did the impossible, which is win a Super Bowl in Philadelphia. So I'm a little conflicted.
I get it. It makes sense. I guess I forgot the Doug Peterson part of it already. How quickly we forget. It's so long ago that he was winning a championship there with the Eagles.
Yeah.
But hey, listen, they've gone a long way towards forgetting him with the kind of year that they had this year with Nick Sirianni. I mean, is this team playing its best football, though, now as we come down the stretch?
No, and the simple answer is because they didn't have Jalen Hurts. And I know they technically had Jalen Hurts in the regular season finale, but neither side wanted to be there, and you knew it. Brian Daboll was doing stuff that a novice Madden player wouldn't even try on the stick. So it was a wash. And the two losses before that, Gardner Minshew was there. So it really comes down to, Soren, Jalen Hurts, his presence, his impact on this team is so much larger than what he does on the field, but what he does on the field is so important that the team seemed to have fallen apart without him. Now, the beauty of it is that I don't have any doubt whatsoever that he steps right back in and the team picks up because he's their leader. He's not a receiver on the island. He's not a cornerback. He's not a defensive pass rusher. He's the quarterback. He's the leader. So I think the team immediately responds.
Tell me what we think of the health of Jalen Hurts. Like, do you think he can play his best football, or is this something that he's not going to be 100% until he gets to training camp next year?
Yeah, I think, honestly, if I were to put a number on it, and they always tell you with polling, right, there's like a 3% chance of error. I would say it's 90% right now. And the biggest reason why, look, you've covered this game longer than me, and you know how this works with the injury, especially with a coach like Andy Reid week to week. But Jalen Hurts is not out there against the New York Giants in a regular season finale where if they lost, they would still be locked into a playoff spot unless the Eagles knew for sure that he was as healthy as he could be, not like running risk of further injury. So the fact that he's had the time to heal now multiple weeks from that, including the bye week, I'm not concerned at all. I know the Giants are trying to target the shoulder. The Giants are trying to do what they can to knock him out of the game. But this is a tough kid, and I am not Lane Johnson's a different story, Soren, but I am not concerned at all about Jalen Hurts because the game plan is going to require that he run. So therefore, there's no real reason, because he can kill a team with his legs as he can with his arm.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He is a weapon for sure. All right, tell me, Jake Elliott defending his use of a, quote, visual marker, that he's not cheating. It's a visual marker. What's the real deal with what's going on with this situation?
Yeah, this is the crazy thing about it, which is the Eagles go for it so much on the opposing 50 and in that I forgot Jake Elliott was on the team for like 3 weeks. And it's wild because this thing has popped up. It's not just him. I saw people were trying to bring this up, I guess, with the Cowboys and Meyer, although that was, you know, something much different where they were using K-ball. The first I heard of it was the accusation of it, and I would say this. Whatever Jake Elliott was using wasn't really working, because this was one of the more frustrating years that he was having as a kicker, to the point where the Eagles just go for it anyway. So I think, look, this is what happens when you don't have Cowboys-level drama surrounding your football team, is people go after the kicker.
All right, give me your prediction on the game. Who wins? What's the score?
27-21. It is division. I'm not going to tempt any fate with the spread. I actually teased the Eagles and our now collective Kansas City Chiefs right down. So 27-21, Eagles win.
All right. We'll see if it's right. Great stuff as always. Eitan Shander in Philadelphia. We appreciate it, buddy. Have yourself a great week.
You too. To you as well. Thanks, sir. I'm living on the
air in Cincinnati. Mo Egger, ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati, Ohio's next. Mo, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. What's up?
Bengals. Bengals at least are up when it comes to the game against the Buffalo Bills. How much of the conversation this week is about Bengals fans that are upset that this game is you know, wasn't part of the coin flip, wasn't part of, you know, a neutral site game? How much is that still a conversation there in Cincinnati?
It's been a part of it. I don't think it's dominated the conversation. Certainly hasn't with me. It obviously is something that you can't ignore. And I think there's legitimate questions about, you know, a lot of the things that the NFL did. But at the end of the day, look, I mean, both these teams played the same number of games. Buffalo had the better record. The Bengals are going to have to go there and win the football game. And I think if they don't, I don't know that the explanation or the excuse is going to carry water that, well, they had to go to Buffalo and they shouldn't have had to go to Buffalo. Zach Taylor is saying as much this week, and I believe most players would agree.
They are taking on water on the offensive line. They lose their left tackle. Injuries are starting to pile up there. I don't know what to think. If you've got one of the worst, you know, one, at least statistically speaking, one of the lesser left tackles in the game, and he goes down, do you lose that much, or does that mean you lost a lot? Because, oh, my God, wait till you see the guy that's behind this guy. How much of a hindrance are the offensive line injuries going to be for this team?
Well, I think if it was just the left tackle in a vacuum, that would be okay. Jonah Williams is the starting left tackle. He is okay. The guy behind him, Jackson Carmen, at least the guy they're going with, spent most of the season as a healthy scratch. I think he was active for the first two games. He was active for the last two games. He is going to be playing his natural position. He lost the training camp derby to be the starting left guard. And then they went out and got, after cutdown day, Max Sharping from the Texans. So it kind of made Jackson Carmen not necessarily expendable, but it certainly slid him down the depth chart. And I think the issues with Jackson have less been about technique and ability and more about preparedness, attitude, and that goes back to his rookie season last year. I thought when he came in the Baltimore game, he was okay. But I think the bigger issue is, you talked about them taking on water. This is an offensive line that on Sunday, you're going to have not one backup, but three. The right side of the offensive line, they don't have their starting right tackle, Lyle Collins. They don't have their starting right guard, Alex Kappa. This is a franchise. We talked about it. This past offseason, really the one area they had to address was the O-line, and they addressed it aggressively. Free agents, and not bargain-based, spent big money to address that offensive line. Well, two of the three guys they got in free agency aren't available, and now the one guy who is the remaining starter from last year's offensive line, he's not available. This unit will take the field for the first time starting a football game on the road in Buffalo on Sunday. It's going to be quite the challenge.
Yeah, no, it is going to be a challenge. There's no doubt the Buffalo Bills, are very good. I think they're the most talented team if they're healthy. We know they're not going to have their Von Miller, so they're down an edge rusher, but still a 5.5-point favorite. Do you think that spread is right?
I think based on what it was leading up to the game that got canceled, I think it's fair. Buffalo Bills were favored in Cincinnati in the game in which Damar Hamlin suffered the medical emergency. So 2.5 points favored for that game. You move the game to Buffalo. It opened at 4.5. I think sports books have been begging people to take the Bengals, which is why you've seen the line move to 5.5. But based on that, I think that seems fair. It still strikes me, though, as a pretty hefty number, given the fact that this team has been cover monsters, second best in the NFL against the number. Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor combined have been great against the number, really since the beginning of Joe's time in Cincinnati. And so I think from that standpoint, the line seems hefty. But if you go back and look at what it was on January 2nd, the Bills were favored here. You would then expect them to be favored by even more with the scene shifting to Buffalo.
Yeah. All right. Where is the confidence level for you? What are you picking on this game? Who wins? What kind of score?
Well, I boil it down to this. Joe Burrow under duress. Got a lot of practice being under duress. You saw it in the AFC Championship game last year, right? But the sacks haven't turned into turnovers, and the pressures haven't turned into picks. And so I have a quarterback that doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Conversely, the Bengals got to the Super Bowl last year, and they won last week on the strength of an opportunistic defense. Josh Allen, as great as he is, as talented as he is, he'll turn it over. I'm putting my money on Lou Anarumo getting a turnover at a key moment, and I take the Bengals on the road.
All right, Mo Egger in Cincinnati. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
All right, man. You too.
Oh, and Chippewa's where we go when we're up in Buffalo.
Matt Parrino, Syracuse.com in Buffalo, New York. Matt, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Why was the game so close against the Dolphins?
They begged Josh Allen to go boom or bust, and you know, in an NFL football game against a pretty good defense, you're going to have some boom plays, and they did. They scored 34 points, but you're going to have some bust plays, and they turned the ball over for three times for the third straight game, and that's become the talking point in Buffalo this week: is can they figure out a way to be the team? Now, they've won when they've turned it over, and they've won when they haven't over this eight-game win streak. But can they be more like the team that went five straight games before this with turning the ball over only three times in that stretch? And that's what they have to do against the Bengals. You give Joe Burrow extra chances to beat you, and usually he's going to find a way to do that. I mean, I heard Mo talking about the Bengals' offensive line. Of course, that's where the Bills are going to try to exploit things in this matchup, is get after Joe Burrow, especially in the middle. And I think Ted Karras has been really good this year, but playing against a Pro Bowl, All-Pro type of guy like Alex Kappa really raises your level of play. I think that with him out, that's going to open the door for Ed Oliver, Jordan Phillips, Daquan Jones, to really mix things up in the middle there. So, you know, the Bills can't turn the ball over in this game if they want to be successful, and they know it.
Why are they turning it over? Is there a defense that's become in vogue that seems to be giving Josh Allen problems? Is it boredom? The Bills, I mean, I think have been all about winning in the postseason. Like, we've floated that idea for why the Chiefs have been sloppy. They're a team that's going to be measured by what they do in the postseason. Do we have a theory? Is it boredom? Is it something fundamentally that the other defenses are doing? Why so many turnovers now for the Bills?
You know, I think part of it is, like, you look at his average depth of target, and Josh likes to attack down the field. And when you do that, you're going to take some chances. You're going to throw some interceptions. And he's had at least a handful that have been over 20 yards where he's just kind of looking to, you know, play down the field. I remember a crossing route to Isaiah McKenzie a couple weeks ago, the John Brown play this last week, where he's just kind of putting the ball out there, trying to give his receivers a chance to make a play. And sometimes that happens. Some of the picks have bounced off players and into the hands of other players. And then the fumbles are just kind of what you take with Josh Allen. He is out there. He plays physical as a runner. When he gets out in space, he's going to challenge defenders. And when you challenge NFL defenders, from time to time, you're probably going to put the ball on the ground. He's done that. So, you know, it's just about, like, you know, dealing with the fact that front for the Cincinnati Bengals, they're going to have some success in this game. It's a, you know, offensive line, I wouldn't say is the strength of this Bills team. They got some good players on it. But they're going to have to, you know, try to protect Josh Allen when he does go back to pass so that he doesn't put it in jeopardy. But I just think it's like, you know, they talk about playing smart, not conservative. But in this game, you got to almost find a little bit, you might have to skew a little bit more towards conservative because you don't want to turn the ball over and give them extra possessions, but at the same time, you're in this conundrum. Because if you do that, you know, if you're checking down all the time and you're punting and you're not being this attack style offense that has been one of the most elite groups in the league over the last couple of seasons, I just you lose your identity. So they're going to take their chances with the aggressive play calling and play style of Allen most of the time.
How much pressure is on the Bills, is on McDermott to push through and finally win the first Super Bowl for Buffalo?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, because I feel like if you would have asked me it before that Bengals game in Week 17, I would have said that it's pretty high. But I feel like everything that happened around DeMar kind of, like, you know, took some of the air out of that balloon. You know, the way that Sean McDermott responded in that moment, and, you know, how he's been such a, you know, steady hand in all of this for everybody. And, you know, whatever pressure there was, I mean, they're all excited to be walking around the facility this week, being able to hug and slap up DeMar Hamlin, who's back, you know, just getting back into a normal routine, like, you know, getting to the facility, going through some of his rehab there. And, you know, that's probably a big part of it. But it does feel like, you know, I went back and listened to the Jim Nance call on the Naheem Hines touchdown in that Patriots game, and the one word he said was storybook. Like, this feels like a movie, doesn't it, with the way that this season has unfolded and all these pieces of adversity this team has faced. So, yeah, I think, like, if it does end this week or it does end next week, I mean, it'll definitely be a big disappointment, not only for fans but for the team and McDermott as well.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, real quick, just give me who wins and what's the score.
Yeah, once we got the final word on these linemen, I really do think that shifts the advantage to the Bills. Like, if they were healthy on the line, I think Joe Burrow has just been so dangerous that I probably would have went with the Bengals. But I just think that I don't think the Bills are going to turn it over that many times. And I think it's going to be the home field advantage. They're 5-0 with McDermott at home in the playoffs. That continue, or 4-0, and I think that's going to be 5-0. 28-27, Bill, is a close one.
Ooh, wow. Okay, that'll be a great game to watch, no doubt. Always great stuff. Matt Parrino in Buffalo, New York. We appreciate the time, my friend. Have yourself a great weekend.
Enjoy the games, guys. Take care.
Tennessee.
Chase McCabe, 102.5 The Game, 94.9 The Fan in Nashville, Tennessee. Chase, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Seren. How about you?
Not bad. Excited about some football to be played. I know the Titans aren't going to be playing, but they're making news. They find their general manager and Rand Carthon, and then do they already know who their new quarterback is going to be? Let's start with Carthon first, and then we'll get to the Instagram message from Trey Lance here in a second. What was the reaction to getting Carthon in place?
Well, I was actually at the press conference today when he was introduced. Very impressed. I mean, he won the press conference, and that was pretty much what everybody said was going to happen. But I think overall it's been good. They're still with the fan base, and I actually like this. There's a little bit of, okay, need to see it play out. What exactly, you know, are the roles for the new GM and the head coach? Does one have more power than the other? I think I heard the word collaboration used throughout the press conference about 73 times today between Amy Adams Strunk, the controlling owner, Rand Carthon, and Mike Vrabel. You can tell they are very much on the same page with that they want this to be a collaboration and not just, you know, not that it wasn't with John Robinson, but John had final say, and that was pretty clear and ultimately led to his firing. This is going to be more of a 1A, 1B kind of deal. Because Carthon kept saying, I want to get Mike the best players. You know, I look forward to working with Mike, collaborating with Mike, all of that stuff. But overall, I think everyone's feeling good about it. It's just let's let it play out. Let's see what the roster looks like and see how long this is going to take to retool or rebuild or whatever they decide to do.
All right, with the drafting of Trey Lance in San Francisco, Rand Carthon was the director of player personnel when that happened. Trey Lance has sent out an Instagram thing, basically, fingers crossed, talking about Carthon being the general manager in Nashville. How much run is that getting, and is that something you think that they will pursue?
Well, we certainly had to talk about it. Now, I admitted, I do a show with a 25-year-old female, and I said, look, I don't understand all the lingo and all the emojis and what they all mean. I mean, I'm 35, but there's a 10-year difference, and I'm over social media. So she said that it basically means good luck, and that's what he was saying, that he was telling Rand Carthon good luck. And So I'm not reading too much into it. He was asked today about Ryan Tannehill, and he quickly said, look, it's not fair for me to comment on him. I haven't had time to evaluate him. Now, okay, I think that's a fair assessment. But if that's Justin Herbert or Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes, you're not going to sit there and go, well, I need to evaluate him first. So that tells me there is a true evaluation that's going to happen about Ryan Tannehill as the Titans quarterback. I'm not 100% convinced, even though I'm still saying he's probably going to come back. I still think there's going to be a process that they go through. On the other hand, he was asked about, can you win a Super Bowl with an offense that surrounds a running back? He, of course, played running back and said, yeah. And that made me feel like Derrick Henry's not going anywhere. So I think it's going to be certainly an interesting situation. Is Trey Lance coming to the Titans? I would say probably not, because the price is going to be way too high. And I think if the Titans try to acquire any type of quarterback via a trade, it's going to have to be a really good deal, because they have so many holes to fill that's not just quarterback. And they have a capable of quarterback. He's just not elite.
Yeah. Okay. It'll be interesting to see all of it, how it all comes together, see them all work together and what they do. It does sound like, you know, I'm with you. If you're going to say you're going to evaluate the guy, it's no endorsement whatsoever. So I think it opens up that kind of speculation, which I think is maybe either a misstep by Carthon or the point. He wants that. He wants that pressure, or he wants competition in for the quarterback position. Real quick, Rick Barnes, is this a team that can finally get Tennessee to the Final Four?
Saran, I don't know. It's funny. I was talking about this the other day I don't dislike Rick Barnes. I'm just tired of underachieving. I'm tired of just getting to March and not doing anything with it. And that's kind of his MO. He did that at Texas. He's done that at Tennessee. He's got some really good regular season teams. They have another really good team. And I have no doubt that they're going to get there. It's just, what are they going to do with it? And I honestly just don't have an answer on that. And if they don't do anything with it, then it's, I think, time to make a change, because we live in such a society where we're impatient. We need results, and there's no results. But I don't know. I love the talent. The talent's there. It's just, what is Rick Barnes going to do with it?
I love it, Chase. 35 years old, too old for social media, but certainly still ready to fire a winning coach. I love it. You're in that sweet spot for an age where you can bah humbug it and still say screw them all. That's fantastic. Chase, you're the absolute man. We appreciate it.
Get off my lawn, guys.
We appreciate it, brother. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too, Saran. Thanks.
Ah, I feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Saran Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He was covering the Chiefs the day Patrick Mahomes was born. He was covering the Chiefs the day Mahomes brought the Lombardi Trophy back to Kansas City.
Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years, a lifetime.
He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
Not quite a lifetime Adam Teicher has been covering the Chiefs. It's not 50 years, but it's a long time, almost 30 years covering the Kansas City Chiefs for ESPN.com. Adam Teicher is our Chiefs Insider. He's brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. If you're looking for a great place to go watch the game, if you're not going to be sitting out in the slop and sleet and rain that's forecasted, but you want a great spot to watch the game and enjoy it with pals, get over to Twin Peaks, made from scratch menu. 29-degree man-sized draft beer. You can take advantage of Cheese Lover's Day in honor of National Cheese Lover's Day. The folks at Twin Peaks are offering one of their favorites for a steal. Get into your nearest lodge for free chips and queso with any $10 purchase. So, free Cheese Lover's Day. I mean, does it get any better than that? I love cheese. You love cheese.
Who doesn't love cheese?
Who doesn't love cheese? Plus, the fights are on tomorrow night, UFC 283. If it's boxing or MMA, it's always on at Twin Peaks. See more information at TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. See them in person. They're in Olathe, Independence, and at the Northland at the Boardwalk. Go check it out, the newest Twin Peaks. Great spot to watch your football, MMA, you name it. It's Twin Peaks, three locations here in the metro. Adam Teicher joins us here in the program. Adam, how are you, sir?
Good, Trent. How you doing today?
I am living the dream, my friend. Living the dream. Can't wait for this Chiefs beatdown that's going to take place coming up on Saturday. Do you agree with me that that's what's going to happen?
I think if the Chiefs play their game, I think they'll cover the spread. I mean, I'm picking it maybe 34-20, something like that. I mean, I think the Jags can hang in with them to some extent, but the Chiefs are the better team, and I think they'll, if they play a clean game, they play like they did against the Raiders a couple weeks ago, I think they'll win this one, absolutely.
Jaguars won a game where they were -5 against the Chargers last week, but isn't that essentially what the Chiefs did the last time? They were -3 in the turnovers, but that doesn't count a onside kick that they allowed to happen and a fake punt, which is really like stealing possession two times. And they won that game by 10 points. I don't think they're going to be -5 or even -3 this go round. I think that equals destruction. Come on, Adam, get on board.
No,
buddy.
Hey! If the Chiefs play a clean game, I think they'll they controlled that game. That's the other thing. I mean, it's not like they put a spurt on at the end. The Chiefs did to win that game. I mean, they controlled that game throughout, and despite all the turnovers. So yeah, I mean, I feel like the Chiefs are in a pretty good place right now, and they should win this game. But who knows with the weather being what it's going to be? Who knows what weird bounces the ball might take? So. We'll have to see, but I do feel pretty confident the Chiefs are the better team and should win this thing if everything else is equal. Yeah,
it will be a colossal. I mean, I don't even want to take the calls on Monday if they don't win the game. That's for sure. What does it look like though? If it goes wrong, if they don't, how did it happen?
Some of the things we've been seeing from the Chiefs throughout the season, whether it's missed kicks. If it's a close game, who's going to be making the kicks? Do you trust the Chiefs kicking game right now? Butker had a nice game in Vegas, wasn't asked to do a lot, 4 PATs and a 44-yard field goal, but at least it was clean and they got it done. So, but do we know it's going to be that way on tomorrow? And what about the turnovers? I mean, I think it's hard to predict. But, that to me is the thing. The things that have been getting the Chiefs in some hot water with lesser teams are the things that could sink them tomorrow, are they going to get grabby in the secondary and commit some big penalties back there with their young guys and give a big play or two to the Jaguars that way? So, I feel like those are the things. That's what a Chiefs loss would look like. We'll be talking about these things next week if Jacksonville ends up winning the game.
Yeah. Listen, Patrick Mahomes, the maturation process is always ongoing, I think, maybe for a couple more years, but seems to have embraced taking the check down when it's there. I mean, you see the numbers from Jerick McKinnon. He's been the benefactor of that a lot. Is he playing his best football right now as we come down the stretch?
Yeah. I mean, he's the least of the Chiefs' problems right now, right? I mean, I think he'll be ready to go. I mean, he's been great in this round throughout his career, and I would expect nothing less from him tomorrow. So, he's the least of the Chiefs' problems, no doubt.
Yeah. What's at stake for Patrick Mahomes in this playoffs? Like, we talked about that to start things, that the chance to, only 12 quarterbacks have won multiple Super Bowls. Only 13 head coaches have won multiple Super Bowls. Like, this getting that second one is a big one if you're, going to be one of the greats of all time. I think this is actually, I'm not saying there's extra pressure on him because of that, but they're actually, this next milestone is a big one if he's able to finish this postseason off with a championship.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, there's a lot riding for him on this. And, You know, it's they don't get one this year. He doesn't get one this year. It's just another year checks off without one. And you can say, well, he'll get one next year. He'll get one the year after. We don't know that right now. I mean, you know, teams are loading up and doing a pretty good job in Cincinnati and Buffalo and maybe in L.A. Let's see what the Chargers do during the offseason. But teams are loading up, gearing up for the Chiefs. Going to make things a little bit different. So difficult. So we don't know what the future's going to hold. I mean, I don't think the Chiefs are disappearing. They're not going to just go away and be what they were before Andy Reid got here. But you just don't know. So you need to take advantage of these things, what I'm saying, when you get them. This is a team that's good enough to win a Super Bowl, I think. You know, I think they have the pieces in place where they can do it, but they've got to do it. So, and tomorrow's the first step, for sure.
Eric Bieniemy was interviewed by the Indianapolis Colts this week. Matt Nagy is reportedly interviewed for an OC job with the Titans. Let's start with Bieniemy. What'd you think about his comments? It's pretty standard procedure. He's streamlined his answer to us when we ask him about job interviews. He's gotten more proficient, I think, at the answer, but really doesn't want to go anywhere other than to say it's an honor to be asked. Does this one actually get done?
There's a tie there with Chris Ballard being the GM of the Colts. I'm not sure he's doing the hiring. I think Jim Irsay's doing the hiring, but... they're going to listen to their GM at least. So there is a tie there, but hard to predict. You know, they've interviewed, 10, 12 guys, I think, now in Indianapolis. So it's a pretty big field, and to think he's going to get it over a bunch of other guys, maybe he will, but I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think that he's the favorite right now out there. So it may be that this is another year for him without a head coaching job.
His name was brought up about that offensive coordinator job in Tennessee as well. Is it time for him to take an OC job someplace else? Because if he's not getting hired as a head coach, it's clear he's never going to get hired from the shadow of Andy Reid. He's going to have to go prove something else.
Yeah, I think that wouldn't be a bad move for him to go somewhere else. But is that the right place? I don't know that that's a great place for an offensive coordinator. I like Mike Vrabel as a head coach, but he's a defensive guy, defensive head coaches tend to be conservative, So there's that to deal with. They don't really have a quarterback there. I don't know what Tannehill's status is, but, you know, that's going to be a hard guy to win with, even if he's healthy. And they certainly don't have an heir apparent there. So that's going to be a tough place to win. I don't know if that's the place to go. If you need to get out to, touch up your resume and impress some people, I don't know that that's the place to go.
I'm going to completely disagree. I think it's the perfect place to go for every reason you just said, because if you go and you have success there, it's undeniable you did it. You will have figured out, help be a part of a brain trust, either bring in Derek Carr, trade for Trey Lance, or prop back up Ryan Tannehill, who is somewhat damaged goods there. You turn that offense into a positive. For all the reasons you said, make it more diverse, keep Derrick Henry healthy, add in another layer to it. That's what gets you the head coaching job. Like, he's not getting a head coaching job because he appears to be just riding the coattails of a successful offensive mind. He gets no credit for anything. That's exactly the kind of job he needs to take, I think.
Well, yeah, if he can make it work, I agree with you. Then it's a great move, and I think a lot of people would look at him differently than they do now. But you have to succeed doing that. And are you going to be able to do that? I don't know. That looks like a pretty tough place.
I don't disagree that it might be a bad environment. But Marvin Lewis left the Ravens after not getting jobs as the defensive coordinator of the Ravens and coached 1 year in Washington and turned that defense around. And then that's what got him the Bengals job. I've been saying that for 4 years. I don't know when that is going to be impressed upon Eric Bieniemy and or his agent. Frankly, let's talk about Matt Nagy. If they're going to lose Matt Nagy to an offensive coordinator's spot, I'm of the opinion Matt Nagy is the guy, right? I mean, Eric Bieniemy was here, and Matt Nagy got the offensive coordinator's job before Eric Bieniemy. That's a timeline that seems to speak to the fact that, you know, and Andy Reid, I'm sure, could say, well, you know, it's his experience or having worked with the quarterbacks at that time, but now Eric's done this, and he's great. Oh, whatever. He took Matt Nagy as his offensive coordinator over Eric Bieniemy when they were both on the same staff. That says to me Matt Nagy at that time was ranked ahead of Eric Bieniemy as an offensive mind. I would hate to see Matt Nagy leave for Eric Bieniemy to go someplace a year from now. And furthermore, I think I mentioned this to you the other day, you know, Andy Reid kind of shoved McDermott out right before their last year in Philadelphia. And the story I get told is that, like, he knew it wasn't going to go well, and he wanted to give McDermott the best chance to not have a, you know, a black mark on his record. So he did him a favor by firing him and getting him out of the way. Well, when does Andy Reid give Eric Bieniemy the push that he needs?
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, this thing is on a roll here, number one. I mean, you know, hey, maybe that discussion is being had that, hey, Eric, this is going to be good for your career to leave. But if Bieniemy wants to stick around, what ground does he have to push him out the door? I mean, the Chiefs are rolling. You know, they led the league in scoring again this year. So, you know, from that aspect, he's got no leg to stand on if he wants to make a change there. So, you know, the Chiefs have lost guys before. They lost Mike Kafka. Look what he's doing with the Giants right now. You know, they lost him last year. He was kind of the guy in waiting for the last few years. Before Nagy came back, he was the guy in waiting, right? To take Bieniemy's job if he was going to get one of these jobs. He'd be the Chiefs offensive coordinator now if Bieniemy had been hired. So, you know, you might lose a guy. Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I'm sure those discussions are being had. You know, I'm sure the Chiefs are talking to Nagy right now, telling him, hey, listen, you know this job is yours if Bieniemy moves on. So those discussions are being had.
All right, let's get to our final four. We're going to do it quick. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Chiefs. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at KansasHealthSystem.com/sportsmedicine. We'll go quick. First of all, give me, what was the score you said? I know you're picking the Chiefs. What was your prediction on the game?
34-20.
Okay. KC, 34-20. Is Matt Nagy in Kansas City next year?
Yes.
Is Eric Bieniemy a head coach next year?
No.
What's your Super Bowl pick? Who beats who?
I'll stick with what I gave you last week. I'll go with the Chiefs over the 49ers.
Okay, there it is. You're the man. We will talk to you tomorrow on the Central Bank pregame show, Adam.
Good stuff, Ren. Talk to you then.
You bet. Adam Teicher, best of the business at covering the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll take a break. Come back, talk some more football next here on the program.
Sure, on this date in 1974, AFC beat the NFC in the Pro Bowl. Garo Yeprimian, MVP. What was significant about that game?
Beethoven performed at halftime.
He did. He went,
yeah, yeah.
I don't think he did.
Probably not.
I don't think he did.
He was dead by then.
I'm going to say,
I think Beethoven died in like 68.
What was significant about halftime?
About the Pro Bowl. The 74 Pro Bowl into the 73 season. Happened on this date in 74. AFC beats the NFC 15-13. Garo Yeprimian, the MVP.
And something like out of the ordinary happened, or like
I wouldn't say out of the ordinary.
Something within football? Was it something within the game?
It was, or something about the game.
Where it was played?
Possibly.
It was the first one in Hawaii?
It was played at Arrowhead Stadium.
Oh, really? Wow, I never knew that.
Yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Their second year of existence, they capped it off with the Pro Bowl. They began playing the Pro Bowl in Hawaii, I think, in 1980. Also, it was played at L.A., Miami, the Superdome. But it was played here in 74.
Wow. Okay. All right. I'll take it. Playing for some
jazz,
a Louisiana kitchen. Great Cajun food. You want a great spot? Great Friday night. Go listen to some live music. Make you feel good. Get your toes tapping. Get some of the best Cajun food around. We got a great menu, a diverse menu. I always say one of the things I love most about jazz is that everyone in my family has something that they really, really like. And that's hard with my 12-year-old. She is tough to please, but we can do it at Jazz. Love going with my buddies, 39th and State Line over by the University of Kansas Health System. is our get-together. They're up north. I'm out south. So that's a great meeting place for us midway through. And, of course, we take the family usually over to the Jazz out at the Legends. Great Cajun food, great live music, great people, locally owned and operated. It is an iconic tradition in Kansas City. Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen, get you some Cajun food tonight. We're going to talk to Kevin Harlan coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Also get you the things you need to know. I thought this was interesting. Listen, Bill Barnwell does a nice job. We heard Danny talking about him earlier. He wrote a story, 20 breakouts on 14 NFL playoff teams. Mm-hmm. Players getting big contracts. You know how it is. It's like one of those, one guy each team should target. Like, oh, yeah. Let me give every fan a reason to clickbait this, right? Yes. That's the thing. Well, we're down to the 14 playoff teams. And Bill Barnwell does a nice job. And, you know, but really, big paydays for Andrew Wiley and Jerick McKinnon? I like both players. Like I said, when Andrew Wiley gets beat, it's not his fault. He's at about $1.2 million. He's like a league minimum. He's a swing tackle that's been forced to play starting right tackle. But he's been available like every year for 3 years, and nobody's given him big dough. He grades like 50-something amongst offensive tackles. Like, what do you think he's going to get? McKinnon, though, is interesting. Jerick McKinnon, they signed in June. Nobody came running for Jerick McKinnon, and they signed him for like about basically the league minimum, then used a salary cap exemption to knock another couple hundred thousand off his cap figure. I mean, is Jerick McKinnon because, you know, is he the, you know, record tying touchdown guy because of Jerick McKinnon? Certainly he played a role. But how much of it is because of Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid?
Yeah, I think what they've done without Tyreek Hill would speak to the fact that it's Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. I feel better about McKinnon maybe getting something going with somebody else than Wiley, because he at least is coming off a year in which he did something exemplary, and he wasn't the previous year, as well the Chiefs were able to get him. But to me, whenever a back lives almost solely on receiving touchdowns, which he has, you kind of wonder at some point they're going to adjust to that, and he has to do other things. I don't know how many other things Jerick McKinnon can do to be as valuable as he's been the last 5 weeks.
I would
which
certainly
is my fear for the playoffs for him. But
I would certainly think that you know, there's some money to give McKinnon a bit of a raise, right? I'd like to see him at the two and a half, a couple of years.
But not a big payday. Not a big chunk.
You just can't. Not the running back position. You can't freak out that they took Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round and then be like, let's give a ton of money to Jerick McKinnon.
Yes.
Right? Love Jerick McKinnon. Want him in a Chiefs uniform. But I think there ought to be a raise of some sort there. You ought to be able to go more than the league minimum on Jerick McKinnon because his blocking may be the most important part, maybe even more so than the great job he's done catching the football. We'll take a break. We'll come back, give you the things you need to know next here in the program.
All right, before Luis Arraez, who was the last player to be traded the offseason after winning a batting title? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.